Morning. So I joined the speakers group, and Phil presented me with this to share my testimony. And I guess the hardest part about that is, where do you start? You know, we all have our story. But I grew up in church. I had amazing parents, amazing role models, siblings. And I just kind of knew church. I was born into a Bible-believing church family, and grew up my whole life. But the earliest that I can remember is I was probably about 5 years old, and church did a salvation message, the John 3:16 message. We all know it. Again, I was five, so I didn't know what being saved was, but I did know two things. I did know that perishing sounded bad, and I knew that everlasting life sounded pretty good. But as you grow older, you start to think of a little different things, and was that enough? Was I just clickbaited by the dessert of Christianity? Was that it? I rose my hand, said some words, and then I was done. I was wrong. 'Cause as you start digging into the Word, you come across this verse in John 3:3. It says, "No one can enter the kingdom of God unless they are born again." Trying to kind of go through my walk and kind of unfolding everything, how on earth do you get born again? I was born. I was already born. I'm breathing. I'm living. But luckily, in this good book, Nicodemus asked the same question, and in verse 6, he's presented with the answer. Jesus says, "Flesh gives birth to flesh, but the Spirit gives birth to the Spirit." Again, not really understanding that, but if we recap it, I had grown up in church, heard this message a lot. It was an every week thing. At the end of every single service, there was a salvation message. We were given the John 3:16. We were given what we needed to give here, and week in and week out, every single service, Sundays and Thursdays, I'd shoot my hand up because I thought it was something that I needed to do. It was something that I could lose it. I always had to hear it. There was no other meat to anything. So I would raise my hand. You know, as you get older, you start keep raising your hand, and you realize, man, I am so saved. I've got some in the bank. But being saved is great. But eventually you start getting into a point in your walk where you start having questions. Who's Jesus? What do I need saving for? How is he the only thing or any person that can save me? So what does it actually mean? See, my church did a really good job at recruitment. My church did a really good job at getting people to raise their hand. But they didn't really do a whole lot in my younger years to support and to kind of explain what happens next. What's the next step now that you're saved? How do you go from saved to eternity, to that everlasting life? Because that's a really far way away from 5 years old. I didn't really know what it was. I had examples, and I tried living that way. And come time around, when I was about 14 years old, I was into the typical boy things. I played football. I played outside. I did pretty much anything and everything. Didn't have a whole lot of electronics like we have today. I think we had a gaming console on our TV in the living room, and there was very limited that I could do. But around 14, we got a computer. Now, the computer was awesome. Computer allowed me to not have to go over to the bookcase and look through encyclopedias or dictionaries or anything. I could just put it in the computer. Inevitably, as you start searching and as you start getting curious, stumbled on some images that made my 14-year-old brain go wild. Didn't know what it was. It was an adrenaline rush. But all I knew is that after that, I wanted more. And very quickly and secretively, so I thought, I became addicted to pornography. It was kind of rough because at that age, again, without having the support of church or friends really going through that and kind of a feel of I needed to keep it from my parents, keep it from my siblings, keep it from everybody because that's what it did. It made it okay in the moment, but then riddled with shame, riddled with guilt, riddled with the feeling of being alone, riddled with you cannot tell anybody about this because you're isolated. This is your fault. You failed. You're a disappointment. So that's where that kind of came in. And I started learning I needed to start wearing masks. And I had two. I probably had more than that, but two that I remember. I had the good church kid. Go to church, you put on that mask. You're around family, you put on that mask. You're around some friends, you put on that mask. And it's the one that you kind of want everybody else to see. But the real one, the one that I had on underneath that, was the one that was shame and guilt. I didn't know how to stop it. I didn't know what I could do, but I lied to myself a lot and said, well, I was in control. I can stop whenever I want. I'm just choosing not to. But growing up in church, switching the masks was fairly easy, because, I knew how to play the game, so to speak. I knew how to, what I thought was pulling the wool over everybody else's eyes. I could wear the mask and seamlessly transition, from who I really was or what was really going on to what I wanted everybody else to see. And this got harder and harder. Got caught a couple of times. But again, the same lie, the same story. You know, I can control it. It's fully my decision to do that, to search those, to look at things. And it just wasn't the case. So we'll fast forward a little bit into some young adult. struggled through this well into my adulthood, ruined some relationships and friendships, and was just kind of on a downhill. But around this time, 21, 22 years old, some big life changes started to happen. I got married. We got pregnant with our first child. It was awesome. I thought, man, I had arrived. I had gone through it, and it was even worse because then I had family members even closer to me that I needed to hide it. I needed to hold it. I needed to deal with the shame because I didn't want to shame them. I didn't want to put them in a bad light or think of me differently. So I did what every good Christian person does when they feel that way, and I shot my hand up and rededicated my life again. And I thought, again, that was it. We're good to go. In 2008, I went to school to be an EMT and a paramedic. It's no secret that in that field, we are, you see a lot of lives lost. You see a lot of calloused people. You become calloused yourself. There's no joy. You work crazy shifts. You go all over the place. You see different people. And it starts, you start having a calloused view of humanity, a calloused view of yourself, a calloused view of faith where in a field there really is none. The faith is you and your partner in the box and the knowledge that you learned in school. There's no other faith that you can really hang on to. And that got really, really hard. I ran a couple bad calls that really messed with me mentally. And I just started to pull a little bit more away from church. Not that I hated church, not that I hated what it stood for. It just wasn't a priority in my life. Sunday mornings would come along, and I could be sleeping. I could be watching TV. I could be doing anything I want. I could go out to breakfast. The priority to go into church just was not there anymore. I didn't have that fire, that passion. And my thought was, you know, church was great for those who needed it. I just didn't need it. I'd put in my time. I rose my hand enough. I lived right. I was in a service field. I just didn't need it anymore. But that wasn't the case. The strain of the hours got worse. The strain of the calls got worse. And it just, it would boil over. And it became to where, when we did attend a church service, I started trying to pick out the things in the church or in the service that maybe were not appropriate doctrinally, or that were not something that I didn't have to go back, something I could use as an excuse. The pastor wasn't exactly right on this memory verse or on this Bible verse, or the pastor wasn't exactly this, or the music wasn't exactly my style, or a whole host of things, or I didn't like the way that they did things within the business side of the church, those kinds of things, to where I knew I didn't have to go back. So this had gone on for a few years. We found a church. My wife found a church, and we were going to go. And I wasn't excited about it. It was a very small church in Pasco, Florida, where we lived, and it was in a little storefront. We had been used to a very large church, so I was going to entertain it and just say, all right, well, we're good. I went, I played the game, and that's it. I don't have to go back. But that night, God started stirring something up a little bit. And it really needed something to, he made me realize that it needed to happen for something to happen in my marriage, for my marriage to work, for my life with my children to work out. By this time, we had our son and our first daughter, and we were, we were just a growing family. But I knew something that had to happen. I grew up in church. I knew somewhere deep inside of me that something needed to change in order for me to lead my family. So I agreed. Let's go. The night before, I had done something in response to the stirring that I hadn't done in years before, and I engaged in prayer. I use the word engaged because a lot of times in church, when you're in there, you can kind of fall into a regurgitating the same prayer. You can kind of just say the autopilot prayer. You know, I pray for my friends, my family, my work, the government. You know, it's general phrases, and it doesn't get you dirty. You put in the minimum work required. So I sat down and I chose that I was gonna engage. An engagement is a very intentional thing. You want to go into it as a conversation, not just that you're speaking at something or an entity, but you are actually going to speak. That's what I was coming into. But unfortunately, with all of the calluses and with all of the feelings and shame and guilt that were there, I wasn't worthy. I came into the situation angry, conflicted. My heart and my brain were battling. I didn't know what was going to be the outcome. Going through the Word, a lot of times, you know, our prayer is all one-sided, and so is this one. But the Word says in Jeremiah 29:12, that then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. That seems like it's kind of a nice little verse, but then when you really listen and really read it, you have to come and call. He's not going to do it for you. But he's willing and he's there. And he said, I will listen to you. So I sat down that night, on that Saturday night, and all the anger and everything that had come up, welled up. One side of me knew that I needed forgiveness and I needed to turn my life around and I needed to give God back my life that I had chosen to run myself. But the other side of me felt unworthy. The other side of me felt I couldn't even utter his name, or I'd be. My own friends and some of family had kind of dismissed it and lost relationships. So why would God, you know, be on board with me coming back? So in all of this, what came out, the literal words that came out were, all right, God, if you want me back and you want my marriage to work, this church is your last chance. Not knowing what I physically said, but in my head, I was challenging God. I was the one that messed up, and my anger made the communication to him where it was his fault. If he wanted me back, he had to make the change. He had to make this next, not me. He had to do it. But what my spirit was saying, what I did not know, is God, have your way in my life. God, bring me back. My spirit knew that he loved me. My spirit knew that he never left. My spirit knew that I was the one who ran from him. So the next day, we go to service. It was an afternoon service. That's how the church kind of worked. So I had all day to kind of stew on this prayer and stew on and not get any answer whatsoever. But I walked it. We walked in. We were carrying the car seat. We walked in, and every single person in that room, that little storefront that maybe held 50 people, was every single person in my life that had spoken to me, spoken into my life, guided me through situations. It was a family reunion. It was nothing short of miraculous. Because these were people that I thought I had lost. People that, friendships that I thought I had severed. People that I thought that would look at me and only see the problems that I had because they knew them so deeply. And we were just immediately embraced as family. We were immediately embraced with God's love walking into that room. And so I sat in that service completely taken aback by my childish challenge turning into just an incredible moment. We attended that church for a few years, had our twins while we attended that church, went up to that church until we finally moved up here in 2018. So it kind of seems like the, you know, greatest feel-good story. Got saved, went away, came back. Greatest prodigal, right? Prodigal story. We all have that. So at this point, you did it. Raised my hand. accepted Christ, rededicated, walked away, came back. It was awesome. I was a full-blown Christian at this point. Touched by God, free from struggle, never have to worry about it again. I had gone through my quota of struggle. Nope. In 2016, life got real hard. On Tuesday, December 20th, 2016, my dad unexpectedly passed away. We weren't prepared for it. None of us knew it was going to happen. I was on the job site that morning with him, only hours before. But in one swoop, my friend, at times my enemy, but my mentor, my role model, the example that I had as a man and a father, and what a true man of God should look like, just gone. I felt like I was right back to being a teenager. I felt like I was right back to being unguided. I didn't know where to go. The person that I asked questions to or guidance on was no longer there. So on December 20th, we lost my dad. On December 21st, I had to become something for my family that I was not prepared for at all. I had to become a version of him for my family. I've got two older sisters, a bunch of nieces and nephews. But as far as being the man in my family, it was it. That was it. So we were part of a motorcycle ministry, are part of a motorcycle ministry. And in March of 2017, just a few months after, we went to Daytona Bike Week, and we were going to serve. We had a little tent, and we were going to do some street ministry and walk around, hand out tracks, and just kind of be a light. We were there for about a week, and we all kind of stayed in the same hotel. Everything was awesome, had an encounter that would have proved very different than who's standing here right now. On the last day we were there, I started getting an overwhelming feeling of failure, disappointment, not able to be there for my family appropriately. So I went for a walk, try to clear my head. And unfortunately, in an area like Bike Week and an event, you start to, you're kind of in and around the enemy. You're on somewhat of the front lines in that area. And you start hearing some voices, and unfortunately, some thoughts and some things that are not of God start creeping in. So I walked a couple miles down the beach, and I took a seat and looked out on the ocean, and that voice came up and said, "You don't need to be here. That should have been you that day. If you walk out in that ocean, no one will know. You can actually maybe even trade places with your dad so your family can be provided for." And that's a hard thing, a hard position to be in. And without knowing that Jeremiah 29:12 says that you can cry out to the Lord, I may not be standing here today. See, the difference is the enemy and the Lord speak to you very, very differently. The enemy wants your destruction. The enemy wants you to draw and be pushed further away from your family, further away than the people that love you, further away than your support group. The Lord wants to bring you in closer. The Lord wants to communicate love and grace and mercy and embrace you fully. And that's the difference between the two. See, I knew I was running, but I didn't know what I was running to. I just knew that I was running away from God. I was running to fun. I was running to what my flesh wanted. I was running away. The funny thing about running is you're running to something and away from something. Those two things are never the same thing. So you have to choose, are you running to God or are you running away from God? Because there's no, you're kind of running in the middle and zigzagging back and forth. The greatest thing about God is that he knows that. And he knows that from time to time, you may turn and start going in the opposite direction. But he's right there when you stop and take the turnaround. He doesn't, you start running away and he starts walking back. You start running away and he stays right there. He stays real close because all he needs is just you to stop running and turn. See, I knew God. I saw amazing things that could only be explained by God. I grew up in church. My family was Bible believers. I ignored a lot of the tug. I ignored a lot of that uneasy feeling while sitting in service. I ignored a lot of the just blatant call-outs to me in different things from God because I was having fun. But God knew. God always knows. He always knows who to put into your life and what love you need to be shown. So my closing verse today seems to be something that we forget a lot. It's Psalm 18:6. It says, "In my distress, I called to the Lord. I cried to my God for help. And from his temple, he heard my voice, and my cry came before him into his ears." You see, the distance that you feel like you are from God is really just as long as saying the words, "God, I need you." And we forget that. See, John 3:16 paints the perfect salvation picture. That God so loved the world, knowing that future me would betray, future me would run away. But despite of that, despite of knowing all of that and everything that I would do, he willingly sacrificed his son Jesus so that this broken, guilty flesh would have the opportunity to walk into a church in Pasco, Florida, and feel redemption, to feel family, to be able to fight off those voices from the enemy, to be able to take that next step, to be able to stop running in the opposite direction, turn, and to know I don't even have to run that way because he's already coming to me. He's already right there. He's already wait. He's just been waiting. When you turn around, he's got his arms out. He's waiting for you to turn. He's waiting for you to walk back. And all we need to say is, "God, I need you. God, I need your help." Um, So John 3:16 is the ultimate clickbait verse, but it is also the ultimate salvation verse. Because it didn't say, for God so loved the perfect world. He just said, for God so loved the world. And that is the perfect picture of love that anybody could have. Life is not without struggles. It will never be without struggles. They're going to happen. They're going to sometimes rock your world. But knowing that God is there can give you the strength and the peace and the courage to walk through them. So this morning, they got the cue because I forgot to call them back up, so that's pretty good. When we do this new song, I just want to put a call out to everybody. Stop running. Just simply during the song, God, I need you. Realize that God is here. He's not somewhere else. He's here. He wants to be with you. He wants you to be connected. He wants you to be embraced. So during this song, just remember that. Use the song as an anthem and cry out to him. We're all family. If you need to physically cry out. So I'll pray and then they'll get playing. Father God, thank you so much. Thank you so much that your word and your love tells us that we just have to say, God, I need you. We don't have to do anything extraordinary. We don't have to do anything that is flashy. We just have to simply say, God, I need you. And then continually say, God, I need you. And thank you so much for being responsive to that, to be willing to take brokenness and make it new, to take shame and guilt and wipe it out and show it love and grace and mercy. Father, thank you for just the continued love, where it's not earned, it's just given. In Jesus' name, amen.